America to Me.
All right.
So I want to start out with, this is kind of the first film I can think of that, you have a bit of a bigger team. I noticed, like, you brought on Bing, who did that great documentary, Mining the Gap, and, for this series, you've got a group of people filming with you. That's got to be kind of refreshing and kind of new for you.
Well, it's not something that has happened frequently. It did happen once before. We did a series back in that came out in 2004, a very underappreciated docuseries back when when those weren't done much, called The New Americans, where we followed the lives of immigrants from five different countries to America over the course of several years. And for that one, we had a similar kind of approach. We brought together a group of individual filmmakers to follow individual stories, and then we put the whole thing into a miniseries. So a similar approach. If you're going to do a miniseries and all that demand, it's really hard to kind of try and pull that off without having a bigger team. And in this case, it was really essential because the nature of the subject matter and what we were exploring, issues of race and feelings of race and intimate storytelling of young kids, it was really important to have a diverse team of filmmakers, and frankly, to, you know, I've been doing this a while, to try and get some younger filmmakers like Bing as a part of it, because that really, you know, that really helped the connection to be made between kids and filmmakers.
Did the choice in which kids would go with which person, kind of shooting wise, like, did that come down to logistics, or was that pre-planned as well? Like, I know, like, you worked with, like, Terrence, for instance, but, like, how did you guys break up the kids according to which person would film mostly?
Well, we kind of decided that as a team collectively, and by that, I mean, I had selected the team of filmmakers even before we had selected the kids. I had been doing, intake interviews with a lot of kids and their parents, and then from a group of 40, about 40 interviews, I selected a dozen that I then put in front of Bing and Kevin Shaw and Rebecca Parrish, and they watched those tapes, and then we met and talked about which of those kids did we want to follow as a film, and then also which kids really appealed to each of the filmmakers individually that they would personally want to follow. And we started with seven kids, and we picked up five along the way. I knew we were going to pick up some kids along the way. I didn't frankly think we'd pick up five more, but we did. And so each of us ended up following three kids by the end of the series. But it was a great process because, for instance, Kevin Shaw has shot a lot of sports documentaries. He's really terrific in that vein. So I knew that for instance, Ken Dale, who, you know, we were certain, we all loved the idea of following Ken Dale's story. And I thought, well, Kevin should absolutely do that story, you know, because it was right up his alley. Charles, living in a single parent household, into poetry and poetry slams, he seemed like an ideal choice for me, given Bing's age. He was the youngest of our filmmakers, and also, you know, Bing's own personal background, that there was a way for him, I think, to relate to Charles more deeply.
As far as the title of this,
just one other thing. Rebecca, our female member of the team, you know, she ended up following three of the female students that we shot, and Rebecca has a really great rapport, intimate rapport, and I think that worked extremely well with the female subjects that she followed, particularly someone like Shanti, who's, you know, a really quiet kid.
Time-wise, Steve, when you finish Abacus, were you immediately starting to shoot this? I mean, what was the breakdown between these two?
Well, they overlapped a little. Most of the shooting for Abacus was done by the time we started shooting this series, but there was all this pre-pro going on for the series to get it ready to go, and that definitely crossed over with Abacus, and then the editing of Abacus continued into the shooting of the series. And I was fortunate because I had two really great editors that were able to work on Abacus. And one of them, David E. Simpson, also is a primary editor on the series. I moved him over to the series at a certain point and then brought in another editor, John Farbrother, to finish Abacus. So there was some overlap, but fortunately, most of the shooting, not all of it, but most of the shooting had been completed by the time the American Me ramped up into production. It was a little crazy, though, for a while.
Was it interesting to go to a school you're obviously familiar with, that your own kids are familiar with, or was it kind of tougher knowing that you knew this place?
No, I think overall it was, it that part of doing the project was easier, in that, yes, this is a community I live in, and I know. The school is literally about 3 or 4 blocks from my house. I've never had subject matter so close, even with doing films in Chicago. And as a member of the community, there were certain advantages to me doing the film that another filmmaker would not have had. I don't think the school board would have allowed another filmmaker to come in and do this. So yes, there were some things about it, but even despite having all this terrific creative support through the segment directors and this incredible editing team and producing team, I'd say that this was as intense and demanding a film as I've ever done, for just me personally. And that's because it was just an enormous amount of work. It was an enormous amount of work to get it off the ground, to get the permissions to get it going. And then once we were in production, we shot a lot, and I shot a lot. I like the other directors, had the camera on my shoulder. I wasn't working with a shooter. I was the shooter, and that was all by design. And I also then had to navigate producing responsibilities, and particularly dealing with the school and with the administration on a weekly basis. We had meetings, and the administration, even though they were cooperating at the behest of the school board, it was still a difficult process. So then in editing, once I moved over to editing, I mean, my edit team had been going at it for 5 or 6 months before I joined the team, but even once I joined the team, I ended up editing myself, working as an editor for nearly 2 years. So altogether, it was about a 3.5-year project that just kind of swallowed me up in every conceivable way, and it was intense. You know, it wasn't as long as Hoop Dreams. Hoop Dreams took longer to make, but in terms of the intensity, this was more day-to-day intensive than Hoop Dreams.
You know, you revisited Arthur and William not too recently, but you got to revisit them in another film. Is there hopes
What other film?
Well, just in kind of like keeping up with them over the years. Not really another film, but like, you've been able to keep touch with them.
Yeah.
Is there Is there hopes to continue the story for these kids when they make the jump into college or not college and like the next steps in their lives?
You're talking about In America to Me?
Yes, yeah.
No, I don't foresee us continuing to document their lives. And much like with Hoop Dreams, at a certain point we realized, even though there were times when we thought we might conceivably we explored the idea of a sequel on Hoop Dreams years later. We decided against it, and for a lot of the same reasons that I probably would hear. It's like, it's a lot to ask of your subjects to give themselves over to being in a documentary like this and all that it demands and all that it requires of them. And even though, you know, I think pretty much across the board, this ended up being a good experience for all of our kids and their families. You know, they paid their dues. We did the film. Now they get to go on with their life. You know, and what we do hope though is to stay connected with them. And I've done pretty good with that over the years of staying connected to the subjects of films that have been that I've done. Because, you know, they come to be more significant to you than just simply subjects in a film. And so, you know, if there's ways that we could be helpful to them, you know, each of us involved in America to Me are there to help our subjects in ways that we can as they go forward, you know, whether it's advising them about, you know, some of them are interested in, for instance, in film and media, you know, so that's certainly something I can help out with. But, you know, we definitely don't, I don't envision, you know, any kind of follow-up. This was hard enough on everyone.
As far as camera-wise, how have things changed for you? I know you shoot, like you said earlier, how have you adapted to your style of picking what cameras you want to shoot with? And was there certain decisions about this compared to, you know, the way you guys shot Abacus, for instance? How do you decide on that?
Abacus, I didn't shoot. I don't shoot everything that I do, although in recent years it's interesting. I've done, in the earlier years, for instance, film like Hoop Dreams, I didn't shoot Hoop Dreams really at all. I mean, I maybe shot a couple of days when Peter Gilbert just wasn't around, you know, but for all practical purposes, you know, that I didn't shoot Hoop Dreams at all. And a number of the films, but starting with The Interrupters back in 2011, I shot The Interrupters, and that was a practical and budgetary choice. And I just found that I really enjoyed doing it again. And you know, I don't, I'm a great DP or anything by any stretch, but I enjoyed it, and there was it worked in a lot of ways from an intimacy standpoint. And so since 2000, and on The New Americans way back in 2004, I did a fair amount of shooting too, but that before Interrupters, that was the last time I'd done any substantial shooting. And so since then though, I've done more shooting. I shot some on Life Itself. I didn't shoot Abacus, and now this series, I shot a lot, you know. So you know, in terms of the cameras, you know, technology keeps evolving, and what we've tried to do is just pick cameras that are that really lend themselves to the approach of the film. So on a film like this miniseries, since it's very much cinema verite driven in its approach, you know, you want a camera that's a real workhorse, that's also easy to shoot with, and you know, you can run and gun with it. Film like Life Itself, which was more interview driven, we opted for the DP on that, Dana Cupper, opted for a C300, which is, you know, has a prettier look to it. But it's not as practical in the field in terms of shooting scenes. And on Abacus, I think we used a combination. Tom Bergman, the DP on Abacus, used a combination of C300 and also the FF7, which is what we used on Abacus. So a lot of it is, you know, a lot of it's dictated by what's the camera out now that everybody's using, as well as what are the needs of that particular production and what's going to be the best practical and aesthetic choice.
Who came up with the title in deciding to go with Hughesbaum?
That was me. I was casting around for titles and asking opinions of our team, and we were all kind of coming up blank on a good title. And so then I decided to first to look at the poetry of what the kids had done with spoken word, you know, that featured prominently in the series. So I started to look at some of the poems that were in scenes and see if there was some phrase there that you know, stood out as a good title, but I didn't see anything. And so then my next thought was, well, what about just, you know, poetry in general, and particularly poetries about the Black experience in America? And I started to just search around, and when I saw the Langston Hughes poem, it was a poem that I had tripped across many years ago, but I'd kind of pretty much forgotten about. And then when I saw that poem, it just seemed apropos in so many ways. It was, number one, it's a poem. If you read the whole poem, it's a poem about, it's not just about the Black experience, it's about not being white in America. It's about, you know, it references immigrants and Indians and Blacks, and talks about, you know, the degree to which America in some ways, in many ways, has been built by all these people of color, not just white people, but yet they feel no real ownership in America. And the key line, which the poem is drawn from, of course, is "America never was America to me." And that's such an evocative line. It seems to me to be a statement of what it means to not be white in America for too many people. And at the same time, by lifting "America to me" as the title, it did two things that I really liked, which was, one is it suggested the intimacy of the storytelling that we are engaged in. It's not America to them, it's America to me. And it also suggested this larger themes that we hope that by focusing on this single school that are evoked by the series, that this is really an American dilemma, not just an Oak Park one.
How important has it been, because you've always showcased a real diversity to your choices in films and subject matters, especially the Black-White issue. How important is showcasing diversity in this country to you personally?
Well, it's very important, and it's not just about diversity. I mean, I think part of the problem is that we have a tendency, and in Oak Park is a perfect example, to think that if you have diversity that you've somehow done something significant. And while diversity is good, it's really just a beginning. To have a diverse school or a diverse community, you know, is better for me, and I think for America, than having, you know, racially segregated communities, for sure. But it doesn't mean, diversity doesn't equal equality, doesn't mean equality, and it doesn't mean equity. And so I think that one of the things that communities in America as a whole have to kind of really seriously grapple with is that question of how do we get to genuine equality. We're not going to get there by just diversifying our schools or diversifying our communities.
I've got to ask, do you watch the show like on Stars, or do you kind of separate yourself when it's on, you know, showcased, or do you go back and watch your work?
Well, And my wife and I have been, a couple of weeks have started watching it because she had seen the first 5 episodes. She'd seen them in various settings, but particularly the first few episodes because we've managed to show them in, you know, at film festivals and such. And she saw the first 5 episodes at Sundance. But starting with episode 4, we decided on Sunday nights to just tune in and watch. So it's just been me and her. And now that we're getting into episode, we just watched episode 6 this past Sunday, and we're into the second half of the series. These are episodes that she hasn't seen at all, so it's kind of fun to watch them with her because she doesn't know what's coming now. And it's something kind of fun watching it on TV the old-fashioned way, you know, as if you're tuning in to a show. I enjoy that. And, you know, the first episode we had a screening at one of the series producers' house where we invited families and kids who were in town to come over, and we all watched. We had a good turnout. They did the same thing this past Sunday, but I wasn't able to attend because I was a bit under the weather. But we've also, you know, made a plan trying to get together as a team and share. You know, we screened the entire 10 episodes for all the main subjects that we're able to attend at a local theater before it ever aired. We gave them a chance to have a preview of the whole thing and watch it on the big screen, which is a lot of fun.
I'm curious, you know, you being able to find people like Bing and Rebecca, and, you know, obviously working with everyone at Cardaquin, with like Gordon and everyone, how much time do you get to watch other documentaries? Do you have other films that you love going to or filmmakers you follow?
I'm embarrassed at staying up on all the work. I do better when I have a film that is. I do much better when I have a film that's on the festival circuit, because when I'm on the festival circuit, I really do make a point of going to watch as many films as I can. I don't just go to the festivals to hang out, go to parties, and, you know, drink too much. I really try to. Because oftentimes my wife's going with me too, and she wants to see films, and that's great. So we will really make an effort to go see as many films as we can. So I do much better when I have a film on the festival circuit. When I don't do as well because I work too hard. And oftentimes at night, after working on a documentary all day long, the idea of turning on another documentary to watch, honestly, can be tough. But, you know, around the Oscar time, I'm in the Academy, I try to do my part and catch up as best I can. But I don't do nearly as well. I don't do nearly as well with any kind of films, scripted as well, as I used to, because I feel like I just work too hard.
So how does Steve James unwind then?
I go to the rec center. I have a gym that I go to. In fact, I'm going to be going there as soon as you and I are done talking. I find that to be a really good release for me. You know, I walk my dog a lot. You know, I watch Game of Thrones. I watch stuff that's just completely sometimes divorced from anything, you know, having to do with the contemporary world and what's going on. You know, those sometimes you just, you know, when you need an escape, it's good to just kind of get away from all of that.
I definitely don't want to keep you from your workout. So I guess the last question, Steve, can you give us any hint of what's up next for you? What ideas are floating in your mind? We're always curious.
Well, I have a current project that I'm underway shooting. In fact, I'm going to film tonight. So there you go. There goes my night. I can't really talk about it It's something that will be announced not too long, so I kind of can't really do that now. But it is definitely it's another Chicago story, and I'm filming now, and you know, I'm excited to do it.
Well,
and, you know, the beat goes on. You move on to the next thing. Finish one thing, you move on to the next thing.
Thanks for the time, Steve. I really appreciate it. And I guess kind of last question, what type of dog do you have?
Yeah. Well, we have a Portuguese water dog, which was, you know, what the Obamas had. But I always hasten to add that we had one first. This is our second one. We got one when our kids were younger. Someone recommended the breed to us because they said they're really playful. And playful was a euphemism. They're wild and crazy, I would call them. So anyway, my wife had the brilliant idea that after the first one passed away, and even though our kids are gone, that we should get another one, which was a debatable idea, because now I have to deal with all the craziness. I don't have kids to play with them all day, so.
What do you?
He's a good dog.
What do you call your dog? Does he have like a human name or a non-human name?
His name is Dodger.
Cool. Awesome. Well,
the name that he was given. We didn't give him that name, but we liked it enough. We just went with it. It was a name given to him by the breeder that we bought him from. Dodger. So seems to fit.
Very cool. Well, Steve, I appreciate the time, and thank you so much. Can't wait to see what's up next.
Yeah, thank you. Enjoy talking. Take care.